Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One,
Spotify,
and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
He's covered the big events and talked to the biggest names in sports for more than three decades.
Brees, end zone, he hit 500 career touchdown passes.
From Super Bowls to the World Series, he's been there, he'll be there, and he's here now for CMI, the Chris Myers Interview.
It's great to have on CMI a true performer or a superstar, and you know him from WWE. He goes by just The Miz, but he's an all-around entertaining guy, big Cleveland Browns fan, which we'll get into. And I'll call you Miz. I won't call you Mike, but even though we've done a few shows before. Miz, how you doing? Things going okay?
I'm doing pretty amazing. I'm not going to lie. I mean, you know, you got Miz and Mrs. out right now every Thursday, 10:30, 9:30 Central on the USA Network, but also WWE. I'm Mr. Money in the Bank, which means, believe it as it sounds, I can cash in a Money in the Bank contract anytime, anywhere for a WWE championship match. So what that means is right now, Drew McIntyre is the WWE champion, right?
Right.
He's on Raw, and then Roman Reigns is the Universal Champion on SmackDown. So let's say, for instance, Drew McIntyre is in a match and he goes through a table. I can run down, cash in my Money in the Bank contract and go, I want to match Drew McIntyre right now. Now he's laying down on the ground. So literally the bell would ring. I would cover him 1, 2, 3 and become WWE champion. That's how easy it is when you're Money in the Bank. So I am doing the best I've ever done.
Was it Randy Orton back in 2010, right? Mm-hmm. You took it from him, right? So
that's
And you get to, there's actually the briefcase you carry around, right? Now, does that have a contract or cash in it or what's
some people use it for other things. I remember one guy used it for like luggage. I use it literally just for my contract. One guy used it as a lunchbox, the last guy that had it. And so I had to actually beat, his name is Otis. I actually had to beat Otis for it because I felt like I was a more deserving, more prone, ready for a WWE championship title reign than I felt Otis was. And I proved to be right because obviously I'm Mr. Money in the Bank now.
Yes, buddy. Now, did you tweet out something when McIntyre won that you said, I don't know whether to congratulate him or feel sorry for him? And that's because
100%. Yes. And I really don't. Like he won last Monday. He had a match with Randy Orton and it was an incredible match, very grueling. And he won. And, you know, it's one of those bittersweet kind of wins, in my opinion, because he probably feels pretty great, but he knows I'm lurking in the background. If he has to have his head on a swivel at all times because I can cash in anytime, anywhere I want. And I'm an ultimate opportunist. I know exactly how to utilize this briefcase, this contract to make sure that I am WWE champion. So Drew McIntyre's reign, I don't feel it's going to be very long. And if it is long, it's not going to be fun because whenever you have someone lurking in the background, it's not fun.
Yes. Looking over your shoulder. How many, you're a young guy. How many times can you have this money in the bank? I mean, this will be your second. Can you keep it going for as long as you're successful?
I believe I'm tied for the most, not many people get to have the Money in the Bank contract twice.
Right.
And I've been very fortunate to be really good at being a WWE superstar and finding ways to make sure that I am always in the main event light and always in a WWE championship talked about superstar. So
yes. So we'll watch that closely. Now you are on Raw, which is on Monday night USA and after SmackDown on Friday, which people have seen on Fox. And of course you have the Miz and Mrs., which you mentioned on USA Network airs at 10:30 Eastern time. Now this is a show because your wife is in the same business, right? The WWE. So is that difficult at home? I know you have two daughters and I know we got to tune in to see how this plays out, but that's going to be challenging.
WWE, I'm very thankful for because that's how I met my wife, you know, the love of my life. I'll never forget. I was a host on WWE's Diva Search. And what that was we were, they were searching for the next WWE woman's WWE superstar. and Maryse walks in as a contestant, and everyone was just blown away by her. I'll never forget, she didn't speak English at the time. This was about, I would say, almost 15 years ago. She didn't speak English at all. She's from Montreal. And okay. So she walks in wanting to be a WWE superstar and goes, "Hello, my name, Maryse." I'm like, "Hello, Maryse. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?" "I will work very hard." And I go, "Well, that really wasn't the question. It was like, tell me a little bit. I will work very." And so it seemed like she had this like programmed answer that she was going to say that she learned in English. And I was like, at the time, you know, American Idol was really popular and Simon Cowell was like mean to everyone. So I was kind of that kind of host slash judge. So I was like, "No, don't give me like a cookie cutter answer. Give me like a real, like, heartfelt answer." And she's like, "Excuse me, I don't understand." So after a little while, I go, "Look, give me a promo in French." She goes, "Francais?" I go, "Yes." "Francais?" I go, "Yes, oui." And all of a sudden, you see just the light click, and she ripped me apart. I have no idea what she said. I still don't know to this day, but I've never been more scared and more turned on in my entire life.
And it worked out. Well, it was enough to get you involved. And you, you both co-executive produce as well as star on the show. So do you discuss when you're not on the show, how you're going to produce it, so to speak, and then you be yourselves? It's really more of a reality show, I think, right?
It's 100%. Yeah. We wanted a show where people can really look at it and go, you know what, these are the things that they're going about in their day-to-day lives. We also want it to be entertaining and fun and family friendly, where you could sit there and watch it with your whole family and just laugh. You know, in the environment that we are in right now, I feel like there's a lot of negativity. And sometimes I feel like you just need to escape your reality and kind of enter something else that makes you feel good. And that's the kind of show that we wanted to produce. We wanted to get out there, but we also wanted it to make sure that it's real. Like, I'm from the real world. Like, I was on the real world back to New York 20 years ago. And I learned what it takes to make a successful reality show. Like, you have to be raw. The times where you have knots in your stomach and butterflies in your throat, you know, those are the moments that people want to see. And, you know, my wife was on Total Divas, which is another show that WWE produces. That's a reality show. And I told her when she first started, I go, "Listen, the moments that you don't want on television are the moments we want to see, because that's the moments that you're most vulnerable, the moments where, you know, you're most relatable." And she understood that, went on Total Divas, had a great time. And when we did Ms. and Mrs., we both set out, like, at first I didn't want to do it, because back when I was on the real world, it wasn't like when you were on the real world and you went out to Hollywood, everyone looked at you like you were nothing and that you were a no talent hack, that you don't deserve to be on TV. You're famous for nothing. All you did was have a camera shoot at you and that's all you did. Now I feel like everything's a reality show. YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. Like, I know what the biggest movie stars are doing right now because they're on Instagram 24/7. You know what I mean? So it's like, So I feel like everything's a reality show. So I was like, you know what? Let's try this. But if we do this, we both sat down and said, we're going to give it our all, and we're going to give people something that they can remember, that they can relate to, that is us. And if there are, you know, butterflies in the stomach moments, we're going to give it to them. But also, you know, we want to make it highly entertaining. You know, I look at reality shows and a lot of people say, oh, they're so fake. They're fake looking. And the reason I think that a lot of them are fake looking is because, you know, real life isn't all that great. Like, you know, your day-to-day life, yeah, you know, you watch TV, you wake up in the morning, like, people don't want to see that. People want to see the entertaining stuff. People want to be entertained. So we have a little bit of all that. All these things that we do on our show are real. We really did them. Do we heighten them up with music and editing and entertainment? Absolutely, because you're not going to want to watch something that's not entertaining. That's what we do. We make it highly entertaining, fun, and real.
How did you get on the, I've read different things, but in a nutshell, the real world, because I know I think you dropped out of college, and I don't know if it was to be on that show or to pursue something different. But
100% to be on that show.
Okay.
My dad wasn't too happy about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was on The Real World, I was at Miami University of Ohio. I was at Theta Chi fraternity, and I was sitting there in my room, and I was watching The Real World New Orleans, and a commercial came on. Do you want to try out for The Real World? And I was like, yeah. Well, here's how. And I was like, oh, man. So I made a video. And by the way, this was at a time when there was no video. Like, you couldn't record a video on your phone. Like,
yeah,
my phone was like a Zach Morris phone from Saved by the Bell. It was a big, huge phone. Like, okay. And so my editing was like on a VHS tape. And I had this, like, I had a camcorder that, you know, I'd carry around with me, and I'd film all these stupid things that I would do. So I had to edit it. So what I would do is I would put the wire into my camcorder, and I put the other wire in my VHS, and I'd press play on my camcorder and record on my VHS tape. And that's how you would edit back then. We didn't have these Apple computer amazing, you know, things that you could edit and all this software. We didn't have that back then. So it was a press and play and record type of situation. But I did do that, and I got a call. And the call was like, hey, you made it to the next round. And I was like, oh, my God, what's the next round? A 50-page application. And I went, excuse me? It's a 50-page application. So you had to sit. I had to sit down and literally answer all these questions. It was 50 pages, like asking everything and anything about my life. Like, ask a question, it was on there. Like, it was crazy. So then I made it to the next round. The next round was I had to sit down, and I had on a speakerphone an interviewer. And I had to put my camcorder on top, like of a, like a TV or something, and basically talk into the camera, and then of all the questions. And the questions would vary. I remember this question very vividly because it was the weirdest question I've ever been asked in my life. Say you're an onion, and I peel away the frat guy. I peel away your family. I peel away your friends. What's at the core of Mike Mizanin? And I looked at the camera and I go, I don't know. Like, I don't know. And I'm hoping that an experience like this will show me, you know, what I really am capable of and what I really want to do. Because honestly, I went to college because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Like, after high school, you go to college because, you know what? That's what everyone else did. So that's what I did. I didn't want to do my business classes. To be honest, I was a business major, right? My business classes, I got D's. Greek mythology, art history, I'd get straight A's. So, like, I was totally in the wrong doing, but there's moments in your life where you can literally look at it and go, all right, I can either do this or I can do that. And this was college. That was The Real World.
Right.
And once I did all the interviews, I went and did a real life, like, kind of audition with a bunch, like 25 other people. It was the only time they ever did it. I got casted on The Real World. And, you know, you have a moment where it's like your parents are, and everybody's telling you, you know, to go to college and do your thing. And then you got this opportunity to do The Real World. And I took the opportunity to do The Real World, and The Real World showed me that if I have a goal, that I can pursue it. And if I really try hard and work towards it, that it could happen. And so once I got back to Parma, Ohio, I said, do I want to go back to college or do I want to pursue what I really want to do? And I looked at myself in the mirror and I saw an action figure of The Rock sitting there on my shelf. And I was that my castmates got me, by the way, because I created The Miz on The Real World. The right. character, The Miz, because I wanted to be a WWE superstar. And I literally said, I'm going to be a WWE superstar. I'm 6 foot nothing, 200 nothing pounds. I really don't have anything going for me to make me a WWE superstar. I never wrestled in high school, but I want to do it. I've loved it all my entire life. I loved The Rock. I loved Ultimate Warrior. So I sat down and tried to find a wrestling school and found one in Los Angeles, California, where I did wrestling school, acting classes, improv classes, and to make money off The Real World. Back then, colleges would like pay you to go do speeches, like motivational speeches to their students, because college is so much like Real World. So there I am getting paid to go to colleges to speak to college students. And I dropped out of college.
But you worked hard. I didn't realize all of those things. You were really working at your craft. You weren't just like, I'm out there on the real world having fun. And you
have to, though. Like, okay, when you set out to do what you do, don't you like set out and like really go for it and try to figure out ways to get better at certain situations? I imagine, I mean, what was like your process in getting to where you got to?
Yeah, it was studying sports, right? Calling in radio shows, learning how to speak before, there was television and got that opportunity. Doing play-by-play into a tape recorder, watching TV at home before I got an opportunity, to call games on television. So yes, at whatever age, and I always found that if you like it, right, Mike, if you really enjoy it, then it's not work. Then you're willing to do it.
I remember when I first got WWE had me come in, like I did Tough Enough, and Tough Enough was a reality show where you could win a WWE contract. I didn't win. I got second place, but I impressed the execs so much that they wanted to give me a job. And the first job that they actually offered me was to come up to Stanford and do play-by-play into as a commentator. I was with Todd Grisham at the time. And I sat down and did a whole reel of me doing commentary, and I told them that that's not what I want. Like, I want to be a WWE superstar. And they're like, look, I mean, we look at you and we see this. And I go, yeah, but I'll prove it to you. Like, let me, I'll go down to the developmental territory. I will make sure I will hone in. Like, this is me retired. Like, being a commentator is me retired. And I will work at it, and I will be amazing at it. But me, I want to be a WWE superstar. So I set out to do it. I got a contract in developmental territory, was there for a year and got brought up. And what did they bring me up as? The host of SmackDown. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I want to be like, I want to be like a big superstar. I want to be a main event caliber superstar. I want to be in the talks of The Rock and the Austins and the Cenas. Right. Like, I want to be in those conversations. And now you're making me the host. And I remember going in with Vince to have a conversation. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe I was going in to talk to Vince. Like, but he wanted to talk to me. And the number one thing that I took out of it, he goes, smile, let him in. And I'm like, all right. He's like, I want you to be the Ryan Seacrest of the WWE. And in my head, I'm going, oh, man, like this is what they see me as. But I looked at it as an opportunity, because if you give me TV time, if you give me a microphone, I can prove to you that I am a main event money caliber talent. And to be honest, the first couple times I went out there was great. Then I was the host of the Diva Search, and I messed up the number, like the phone number, like the most important thing. Like, we're live. We don't have cue cards. We don't have teleprompters. We're live. And I'm in front of 20,000 people, millions watching at home. And I have to make this tagline. And you understand, like, when a company tells you, look, this is our tagline. And it's like the most beautiful women in the world or something like that is the tagline. Right. And I say the sexiest women in the world. And in my head, I'm going, oh, my God, I just messed up the tagline, the big tagline that everybody wants to use. I just messed it up. So all I'm thinking about in my head is that tagline. And I forgot my next line. And all of a sudden, I get a cold rush over me. I have my mind goes blank. It was like, you know, when people say you freeze, like that was the first time I've ever frozen in my life. And I couldn't believe it. Like, I couldn't say anything. Luckily, they played music to where literally the girls would just come out to where I'll just have to name the girls. And I didn't even know half their name. Like, I can't even remember half their names. And then I had to remember the phone number, which I wrote on my forearm. And I forgot the phone number. And I was sweating so much that the phone number washed off my arm. So I didn't even know the phone number for everyone to tell. Like, and we're live. Like, it was like one of the worst experiences I've ever had. I remember going back into the gorilla position, as we call it, is where Vince is sitting and going, I'm so sorry. I will work so hard to make sure that this never happens again. And he looked at me and goes, I know you will. And he gave me another chance. And this is to Vince's credit. He gave me another chance and another chance and another chance. And have I messed up? Absolutely. But the mistakes are what drive me, are what have made me the caliber of whatever caliber you think of me as a talent. That's because of all the mistakes that I've made. it's gotten me better.
Yep. And what a great story. And Vince McMahon, obviously an eye for talent and for entertainment. I wanted to go back for a moment because talking about your reality TV background and WWE, do you think it's a reality show in a sense? And what impact has it had on wrestling over the last couple of decades?
Oh, 100%. It's everything. Like, I look at WWE, if you want to be in entertainment, WWE is the greatest tool for anything in entertainment. You want to be a play-by-play broadcaster? Go to WWE. You can do commentary, color. You can do all the play-by-play you want inside to the WWE universe. Now, you want to be a host. You go out in WWE, you are live. You are out there and you are talking to a live audience. You want to be a WWE superstar, an athlete. You want to entertain an audience. There you go. Go in a WWE ring and wrestle. Like, it has all walks. I mean, this being a WWE superstar has prepared me for everything, every obstacle I've ever had in entertainment. I remember when I first got the Marine 3 Homefront, the first movie I've ever done, straight to DVD, but this was a huge opportunity for me. Like, I was like, oh my God, I'm the lead of a movie and people are relying on me to be a success. If I fail at this, then I feel like I've let down everyone that worked on that movie. So it was a lot of pressure I put, and all the preparation that I did, acting classes, improv classes, being a WWE superstar, prepared me for this role. I walked into that role and I was a little timid. I was like, ah, man, I don't know what to do. I called The Rock because at the time I was in a program in WWE with The Rock because The Rock came back. And The Rock's the biggest movie star in the world. I asked him for advice. I texted him. I said, hey, do you have any advice? Not only did he didn't text me back, he called me and talked to me for an hour before I was about to go out there. And literally, like, he's such a motivator and told me such great advice that I was like, it was smooth sailing from there. And then I got to do, you know, three more Marines after that. And it was an incredible opportunity. And I don't think I would have been able to do as well as I did if it wasn't for being a WWE superstar and learning the things that WWE taught me.
Yeah, you have to be an entertainer. By the way, who would cut the best, other than yourself, best WWE, who'd cut the best promo with Superstar today?
The Rock made me want to be a WWE superstar. Like, yeah. I remember watching him thinking, I want to have that kind of energy. Like, when The Rock says he's the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, in all of entertainment, he truly is. Like, he believes it. And he walks out there and you feel the electricity. You feel the energy. You want to hear what he has to say. You want to see what he's going to do. That is an immense amount of just star quality that obviously the world has now found out about because he's the biggest movie star in the world.
Yeah, it's funny. Years ago, I sat on a plane. I was traveling back from a sporting event and sat next to him. This was before. This might have been, I don't know how many years ago, before he hit it big. But you could see that he wanted to do that. And he was, as you said you did, he put the work and the time in and did all the extra little things, but was a very down-to-earth regular guy. And I'll never forget that because you can see that core in him. And I think that makes him very appealing, which leads to my thought on, in your business, the hero or the villain. And sometimes you play both, you bounce back and forth, people choose sides. Or I guess in your parlance there, it's face and heel. Describe what that's like.
There is no better feeling than hearing your music hit, walking out onto the ramp, seeing 20,000 people chanting, "You suck," and booing you and saying,
really?
"You are the worst human being in the world. We hate you." That is what I love. I've been a bad guy, AKA heel, for almost my entire career. And I love it. I enjoy it. And I think it comes from my dad. And I didn't realize this, but whenever my dad walks into the room, he's the type of person that he'll just be like, "George is here." And everyone will go, "Oh God." Yeah. But you really want to hear what he has to say. You really want to see him, but it's just the reaction that you have towards him. I have that same effect. I walk into a room and most people are like, "Oh God." And it's allowed me to be one of the greatest villains in WWE history, I would say. if you watch Miz and Mrs., it's not really the Miz, it's more Mike. And you get to see myself with my wife, with my two little girls who, you know, I always envision myself having boys. I think, as a guy, like, I'm like, yeah, I want boys, blah, blah, blah. But having two little girls, I wouldn't want it any other way. Like, I love being a girl dad. I love, you know, having tea parties every day. You know, whenever they'll literally put on Frozen outfits and, you know, I'll be the snowman. For Halloween, we were Minions. I was Gru. My wife was Scarlet Overkill. It's just, we have a blast. It's so much fun. They're always entertaining me. And in the love, like whenever I come back from, you know, being away, watching my little girl run and hug my leg, like it warms my heart. It's like having daughters. It opened up a piece of my heart that I didn't even know I had, a piece of love that I didn't even know I had. And now I have it and I love it. And honestly, as much as I love it, it is a lot of work.
A lot more work
than I ever thought it would be. I remember when my friends would like call me up and be like, or I'd call my friends up with kids and I'd be like, dude, let's go out. He goes, dude, I got kids. Blah, blah, blah. You got kids, whatever. I got dogs. It's fine. It's not the same. It's 100% not the same. And now I understand. And now I call them and I go, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. I thought I had an idea of what it's like to have kids, but I didn't. And I apologize for always sitting there saying, oh, he never wants to go out. He never wants to do anything. He always uses excuses. I got kids, blah, blah, blah. Now I get it. And I understand it is a lot of work. And it's like the hardest job is not being a WWE superstar. It's being a parent. So for all the moms and dads out there, I support you. Like, you have the hardest, the stay-at-home moms and dads have the hardest job in the world, 100%.
I think it's going to get even more challenging as they grow older. Now, I've seen they're very young. Do they know what their mom and dad do? Do they know that you wrestle in the ring and that you're this supposed bad guy or he?
We let them watch it. I think they just like the colors and the music and the bright lights. I don't think they understand as of yet. I know they don't understand because if they did, they would treat me like a superstar. They treat me basically like I am their maid and that I need to do everything for them. If they want it, they will literally annoy me until they get it. And so it's just one of those situations.
Yeah, is the USA Today show, the Miz and Mrs., is that kind of maybe setting up the audience for you to be more of a face and less of a heel? I mean, I know because sometimes over history, you know, the people have shifted back and forth.
You'd think that a show, a family-oriented show that makes you laugh, that entertains you, you know, I mean, the things I do on this show are pretty incredible and they're very vulnerable. And whenever you're very vulnerable, it kind of makes you into a relatable character and people like you. That hasn't happened for me in WWE. I guess I'm just really good at being hated as the character, as the Miz. And even if you do like me, I can literally get on a microphone and make you hate me for that moment. And then you'll go back watching Miz and Mrs.
Okay, fair enough. Do you have a favorite heel of all time?
Me. That would be the heel Miz talking. I don't really look at people as heels and faces. I looked at them as superstars. Like, I loved the Ultimate Warrior. He was always a good guy, but even if he was a bad guy, I would have still liked him. I just loved his energy. The Rock, whether The Rock was bad or The Rock was good, I always wanted to hear and see what he was going to do. So I just enjoyed the character. So it wasn't heel or face for me. It was a character thing for me.
All right. And your signature move, how would you describe the skull crushing finale? I mean, if you were telling,
think of a full Nelson, I put you in a full Nelson and then I sweep your leg to the front where you land on your skull. It's called skull crushing finale because it's your skull that hits the mat. It's crushing your skull and it's the last thing you'll see.
Do you ever feel sorry for any of your opponents?
No, okay. They're doing the same thing to me. They're trying to put on their RKOs and their Claymore kicks, you know? So I'm going to make sure that I hit the Skull Crush finale before that.
Well, it's very clear too, Miz, that your impromptu and acting classes, along with your interest, you knew what you wanted to be. Those come into play. Do you ever ever forget, like, hey, this is the real me, or I'm this is me playing a role? Is there ever a line there where you get which one am I?
No, it was for a little while, like when I first started doing The Miz on The Real World 20 years ago. But I've been doing this for so long that I can just go in and out of The Miz all the time. And honestly, whenever I start going into The Miz at home, Maurice is very quick to check me.
All right, fair enough. Before we let you go, five for finding. Five questions here. These are basics. You finished the line for me. Number one is, worst job I ever had was what?
Either flipping burgers for my dad at Mr. Hero, but honestly, I loved that job, or being a box stacker for JCPenney. I also was a clothes folder for Abercrombie and Fitch, and a greeter, by the way.
A greeter.
That wasn't really a bad job. All I had to do was say, hey, how you doing? Hey, well, thanks for shopping here. Hey, I really appreciate it. That was probably the easiest one.
Yeah, as I say, you have the right social skills for that. All right, my drink of choice is, it doesn't have to be alcohol, it could be any kind of beverage, but what is your drink?
Oh, almond milk latte with sugar-free vanilla.
All right, sounds too healthy. Here we go. I could go without looking at my phone for blank.
Oh, I don't even need it for a day.
Really?
Unless I'm working. So, for instance, right now I need my phone because I'm on it.
Right.
But or if I have to do some promotions for some other things, like if I'm working, then I need the phone, but obviously I don't need it. Like I'd rather just play with my daughters. Honestly, when I come home, I kind of put the phone away so I can be there and present with my daughters and they don't just see me on the phone all the time.
Okay. Yeah. So as active as you are, that's good that you can separate. Some people are just addicted. We're all guilty at times. Here we go. A couple more. I don't feel comfortable when wearing blank.
I don't feel comfortable wearing Speedos. I've never liked them.
That's a good thing.
I wear them in WWE. I'll never forget when Vince told me that. I got fired from WWE by Jeremy Piven when he was a guest host on Monday Night Raw.
Yes.
So the next week, I came back in a mask and I had to fool everyone, right? And I normally wore shorts. So no one ever saw me in like the Speedo gear that you see me wearing today. So I was like, oh, I'll disguise myself in this Speedo gear, put a mask over my head, and I'll be on a contract on a pole match. I win the contract on a pole match. I get back and Vince goes, you got great legs. You're wearing Speedos from now on. And I was like, oh, man. I'm still not even comfortable in them.
Well, that's interesting. All right. On this one, we are in a reality TV show, so we know that. But if they're making a movie about your life, what would the title be?
Oh, man. I don't know. Welcome to My Reality.
It could be used from a previous title of Almost
maybe,
Famous.
Maybe I'm the Miz and I'm awesome. Maybe use my catchphrase.
and Not So Modest. Well, before I let you go, I have to, you know, maybe down the road when you've done everything else, you can actually call Cleveland Browns games. Would you enjoy that? Would that be a nice
my God,
touch to your career?
Come true. I watch every Browns game. You know, I'm a lifelong fan ever since the Bernie Kosar days when I was a child singing Bernie, Bernie. Oh
yes.
Yeah, Super Bowl. I remember that. I still remember that vividly in my school bus, all of us singing it, driving to school. So yeah, I mean, I'm a lifelong fan. I love what the Browns have done this year, putting Stefanski as the coach. I feel like this is a very well, you know, you always see like, oh, it's a very well coached team. You never know what that means. And then when you're a fan of the Browns, you finally realize when you have a good coach, because you see it and you see the schemes that he's plotting and playing and you're like, oh, wow. And, you know, a lot of people have given Baker a little hard time. I think Baker just needs to have a coach for more than a year and an offense that he can run for more than a year. And I think he has the talent that he needs. I think Stefanski is working him perfectly. I think the run game is exactly where it's at. Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, working it towards it. And I think the defense, Myles Garrett is the best defensive player in the NFL right now. And this is the first time that in my life that I can remember that I was like, wow, this is a playoff caliber team. Like, I can't remember the last time, like every year I'd go, we're going to Super Bowl. We're going to Super Bowl. And everyone would laugh at me. This is the first time that I say we're going to the Super Bowl And people are like, yeah, but they kind of like, yeah, no, they're not, but they're a good team. And it's like, ooh, wow, you're giving me a compliment. The Browns a compliment that we're a good, and we are a good team. It's a good team. And I'm excited for the years to come. I think it's a young team. And I think that for years to come, I think that we're going to be talked about as a franchise to be dealt with.
Yeah, they're entertaining. Let's finish with this, because you touched on it back when you were speaking at colleges. What would be your most significant message if you had to streamline one thought that you would either tell the students then that you remember now that you would repeat to people if you were talking to them about what was going on, where they were headed in their lives?
Yeah, the best advice I've ever gotten, I remember I was, believe it or not, I was at the Playboy Mansion, and I saw a superstar named Billy Kidman. And I went up to him, and this is before I was a WWE superstar. This was when I was trying to get there. And, you know, they always tell you when you're learning, you know, the art of professional wrestling, that if you see a WWE superstar, you know, pepper him with some questions and be a sponge. So I always go up to him and I go, what advice do you have for me to become a WWE superstar? And he said, honestly, people are going to tell you so many different things. The best advice I've ever gotten was stick with it. And I was always like, that's it.
That's it.
All you're giving me. And then as years progressed, I watched, you know, people, you know, leave the training facility that I was at for many different reasons, some money, some family, you know, some because they're loved ones. But sticking with it was the best advice, because there are times when you doubt yourself, when you think, God, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if this can happen. Like, you doubt yourself. You have those moments. And if you stick with it, only good can happen. Because if you sacrifice it all, you work hard, at least you know you did everything in your ability that you could to try to become what you want to become.
That's good advice. Yeah, because then, you know, if it didn't work out, then that wasn't meant to be, but you gave it your best shot. Well, I always enjoy talking to you. Good luck to your Browns. We'll be watching close with your briefcase.
Super Bowl.
And all right, and best to you and the family, The Miz. We'll see you next time here on CMI, The Chris Myers Interview.
Thanks for listening to CMI, The Chris Myers Interview. Make sure to subscribe, rate, review, and spread the word. Get new episodes every Wednesday on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.